Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're welcome along to Monday evening's Off The Ball. So a much needed win for Andy Farrell and Ireland at Murrayfield. Johnny Sexton once again to the rescue. England coming to Dublin on Saturday. We will discuss all with Niamh Briggs and Keith Wood on the way after 8 o'clock. Meanwhile, Nick Harris is going to join us around 7:30 or so to unpack the medical tribunal verdict against Dr. Richard Freeman. Freeman being the team doctor at Team Sky and British Cycling during their halcyon days. Plus, football show includes Pat Nevin and Brian Kerr, Liverpool Wolves, on Monday Night Football this evening. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off The Ball on Twitter. Richard McCormack, evening.
Hey, Joe.
Adrian Barry, Johnny Sexton, come at the hour, come at the man, did his thing.
Are you introducing me as Johnny Sexton, or what's going on?
No, I said your name first. Yeah,
about how great he is.
Yeah.
I mean, how long have we got? The man is he's so good. Like, you literally couldn't take him off at the end of that game because, like, you know, I mean, partly maybe reflection of the bench, but I do think that, what a kick at the end. And like, when you're chasing a game like that, the momentum's gone entirely against you. I think there are. Clearly positives, he says, before getting into some of the other stuff. But there are clearly positives to be taken from the game. Like, the game was getting away from Ireland, wasn't it? Like, we were, even when we were 7 points down, it was like, oh, this is not looking good. No. This looks like it might possibly get away from us here, and in all likelihood will. Like, they had a real head of steam built up. But, balls of steel, really, to knock that one over. Even the trajectory of the kick, like, is it going to squeak in? And then it eventually does. But just the balls to go after, I thought, was great. I thought Scotland weren't great, to be honest with you. I thought Ireland, in large parts, were not great either. They, at times, the basic skills, at that level, you just rarely see the best teams in rugby making the basic errors that we're making at the minute in relation to handling, and like, some of those are just killer. Like, they're just absolute killer for momentum, killer for possession, killer for territory. And I don't know, like, how do you fix that? You can't fix that stuff really that quickly. So, lots of good stuff, and that's a work on, Joe.
Yes, most people's analysis has started with, yeah, no, great to get the win, but. Mm. And England are coming to town, and they looked very, very good again against France. If you didn't catch, I don't know if you caught that first 40 minutes, Richie. That was, I think, the best 40 minutes of Six Nations rugby I've seen in a decade plus, maybe in the last 20 years. I mean, I'm sure there are other halves which compare and had more at stake. But in terms of just pace and quality and verve and two teams, you know, raising each other, it was phenomenal for about 40 minutes.
Yeah, I'd say that even stretched well into the second half as well. And when you consider that it all came down to that, you know, contentious Maro Itoje try right at the end. But yeah, like you mentioned, the first 40 minutes were some of the best rugby union we've seen in donkey's years. And anybody watching that, even prior, obviously, to Ireland's performance against Scotland yesterday, would have been watching it with something of a lump in their throat, considering what's coming their way at the Aviva on Saturday. Because England do finally, late on in the Six Nations, but they do finally look like a side reborn and a side that's usually playing under Eddie Jones. But what we saw was, between the two sides, was exactly what you want to see from modern professional rugby union. There was no sense of a ground and pound defence of, let's see what we can squeak out of these next 10 minutes and let's see what yards we can make out of this kind of game. It was very much a, we're a good side, we're going to beat you, from both sides attitude. And that was just an absolute breath of fresh air, because what we've seen from a lot of sides, and even, you know, you look at Wales, who are going into that final match with France with a chance of winning the Grand Slam. Like, at no point could you say that we've seen that from Wales this season, like a performance that we saw from either side at Twickenham the other day, and yet they're going for the Grand Slam. But France and England very much showed us the standards to which we have to be, you know, try and reach the next couple of years, because we're some ways off it, as by the evidence of the weekend.
Yeah, there is that. Now, look, I do sort of increasingly think that, well, Kelleher looks like a real find, and he'll come into the front row over the next few years. And my goodness, Twinkle Toad Tadhg Furlong is just the real deal. He's unbelievable. Ryan Baird's going to be part of that second row. Geez, if Caelan Doris comes back to fitness and you've Dan Levy hanging around as well, that back row looks incredibly strong. And then, you know, Craig Casey is coming through, and by all accounts, you know, we saw glimpses but against Italy, but by all accounts going to be a serious player. Joey Carberry started for Munster at the weekend, so, you know, that backup and ultimately that succession to Johnny Sexton is there. And then we have plenty of riches across the back three, you know, Jacob Stockdale, and you have Larmour, and look, James Lowe obviously has to improve defensively, and Keith Earls looked as sharp as ever again, and Hugo Keenan's made the 15 jersey his own. Robbie Henshaw's in the form of his life, peak years over the next 2-3 years ahead. Gary Ringrose didn't have a good day, but, you know, quality operator. So I'm kind of optimistic in many ways, but where I do really agree with you, Rich, and I'll throw it to you, Adrian, that moment where Furlong has the twinkle toes, you know, and says, "Woo, see you later" to one, and "see you later" to two, and gives the ball to Stander, and Stander's there with, you know, three fellas outside him, and it's the kind of moment where you imagine France, say at Twickenham, are going to make 40 metres. You know, whatever shape they take, whatever way they decide to do it, they're going to make 40 metres. And yet in our case, it's, I don't know if there, you know, there didn't seem to be an easy option for Stander as such, whatever shape was outside him. And then his effort at the pass, this big loopy thing that bounced and it trickles out over the touchline, and you think, my God, we are miles off what we saw at Twickenham in that respect the previous day. That's where you kind of think, God, those moments. You just want an Irish team to catch fire in those moments, and actually, you know, we just didn't take advantage of what Furlong had done.
I think that, like, Andy Farrell or Simon Easterby or Paul O'Connell or Fogarty, any of them who are listening to this now or turn their hair out with what I'm about to say, but so be it. Like, Ireland are very conservative with their team selections at the minute. There's any getting away from that. Like, Ronan O'Gara is talking about our 2023 plan beginning on Monday week once this Six Nations is finished with. But you would have to say they've been conservative. And at times, you just have to be scratching your head about some of the team selections. So I think there's that to begin with. It'll be fascinating to see what happens with James Lowe, for example. So much conversation about him and the defensive shortcomings that are clearly there. Do they keep faith with him in the way that they've kept faith with other players who've made errors? Billy Burns, obviously, for example. Do they keep that going, or do they look to swap him out? And in your point, and it was well pointed out by, I think it was Ronan O'Gara yesterday on your analysis, was making the point about the options that were wide. Yeah. And when all of that was there, we were lumping it up the pitch. So, yeah. Like, and actually, I think O'Gara made the same point maybe when he was on with you on Saturday about when they're in the headlights, they don't know what to do. And like, that's, so look at, like, you talk about the personnel, and I would agree with you all day long, but will the approach change?
The point Ronan was making is that almost the approach probably has changed, but like, this group, considering Schmidt was there from what, 2013, have gone from 6-7 years of being given very detailed instructions on the training ground, and you just need to do this, this, and this, and you'll fit in as a cog into the bigger picture with the other 14 players, and the cumulative effect will work. And it basically did work up until the final year. It was absolutely phenomenal. So I think the point Roger's making is they've gone from detailed instructions, and you need to be here, and then you need to be there, and then you need to get back up, and you need to go to this spot, and if you do that, it will work. They've gone from that to now trying to play heads of rugby, and almost institutionalized in the old way. So they're in their, almost in their infancy with this, and that's why they're not taking some of these options. It's how long is it going to take for them to kind of embrace the new heads up style is the big question mark.
But Joe, how does that apply to, so let's say the Leinster players, for example, who do play a lot more heads up, than it's a lot more instinct than structure, let's say. I mean, within a structure.
A lot of structure,
and
too.
Also, the players that are coming in, like some of the players that you've mentioned, who, some of whom have had absolutely no experience of Schmidt at all, and some very little. Like,
true.
That might buy you a little bit of time now, but short shrift, I would think.
Yeah. No, it's they're all fair points. And obviously, England come to Dublin on Saturday, and they look good again, to say the least. We'll start there, because I know, Richie, that's where you're starting your news round, which is on Off the Ball on News Talk. But thanks to Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. So two serious enough injuries for Ireland for Saturday?
Yeah, Gary Ringrose and James Ryan ruled out of Saturday's Six Nations meeting with England. Ryan sustained a second head injury of the competition during yesterday's narrow win away to Scotland, while Ringrose picked up an ankle injury that requires assessment, the IRFU say, by both the Ireland and the Leinster medical teams. In better news, Peter O'Mahony could return for the game at the Aviva, having served his suspension for the red card he received against Wales. Meanwhile, Felipe Contepomi has backed James Lowe to prove his worth on the international stage. The winger's defensive abilities or lack thereof were cast in further doubt yesterday by his display at Murrayfield. But Lowe's backs coach at Leinster believes he will improve with time.
Yeah, definitely Lowe is not renowned for his defence or big tackles. He's more renowned for what he can do with ball in hand going forward, you know. But having said that, it's hard to talk now about his defence, because it's more about his technique, but also about the system. And in fairness, our defensive system, the Irish system and the Leinster system are different. So it's hard to... I'm not in the Irish camp, so I don't know exactly what they ask him, but I can see that it's different the way they set up certain positions and the way they set up the winger than we do. So... it's very harsh for me to give an opinion on something that I'm not totally informed or know about it, you know. So, but I think he'll get better and hopefully he gets better and sort out whatever the defensive problems they had, you know, for the next game that is a massive game against England.
So that's an interesting bit of context, different systems. And when Lowe first arrived at Leinster, there were issues with him getting his head around the defensive system there, and he had to learn on the job a bit. And, you know, Ron O'Gara made the point that when he was growing up, he suspects Lowe it would have been, you know, 20% defence, but 80% ball in hand, what can I do? And now he's trying to catch up. And it's a tough platform to catch up when you're stepping up to test level, where everyone's faster, everyone's smarter, mistakes are punished more, and you're working with a new system. And you get off to a rocky start over in Cardiff, and that continues. So, you know, he's juggling a lot. And I think when he just threw the ball out at one stage, a few minutes after the Hugh Jones try, you could just see, you know, not that his head was gone or anything, but he knew himself, oh, this is not turning into a good day. And you have a lot of sympathy for someone like that. That said, even he would admit himself, the tackle was the tackle. You just have to make the tackle.
Yeah, definitely. And he does seem like one of those, from everything you hear about him and see with him on the pitch generally, like, he is a confidence player, isn't he? Like, you can see him on the pitch growing in energy the better the game is going for him, which has not been the case at the minute. But Jesus, you're right about those Felipe Contepomi comments. Like, I think they're really interesting. Like, even the system is in itself a standalone point. But also, like, you'd like to think that... Simon Easterby or Andy Farrell or somebody could pick up the phone to Felipe Contepomi and say, hey, you're working with this guy day in, day out. We've just got him in. We're thinking about playing the system. What do you reckon?
They are. Contepomi earlier on in that clip, not the one who played there, but it's kind of, it's a much longer answer.
Okay.
But he says that there is back and forth conversations between the camps, whatever provincial one it happens to be, about players and player development and how best to utilise them. So there is, or there are, those conversations ongoing behind the scenes that we don't necessarily know about or are privy to.
Yeah.
So Contepomi is saying, don't use him in this system because it doesn't really suit him. And Andy Farrell is saying,
well, he might be. He could be talking about any number of things with him. And he might be talking to them directly. But, you know, those conversations between the lines of communication between province and international don't stop once the players go away. I think that was his general point.
It's probably a combination of factors. New system. And look, the system can suit him for 98% of the time, and it's the 2% that's exposed and talked about. But new system. And he is stepping up to test level. You know, there is a difference. We hear that all the time. So he's juggling quite a few things. And tough school to be, you know, to be learning there, you know, and high profile where it's talked about all week. And, you know, it's tricky. But you do wonder now with the England game, can you throw him back in there? It's probably difficult. We'll put it to Niamh Briggs and to Keith Wood after 8 o'clock. So we have Monday Night Football this evening. Liverpool in action, Rich.
Yeah, and they have the chance to leapfrog neighbours Everton in the Premier League table tonight. A win for Jurgen Klopp's side away to Wolves would see them vault two places into sixth. Wolves line out with Rui Patricio in goal, their familiar back three of Willie Bolly, Connor Cody and Roman Saiz, with Nelson Semedo and Johnny Otto, their wide men. In midfield, Ruben Neves and João Moutinho, with Adama Traore and Pedro Neto either side of Willian Jose. For Liverpool, rarely unchanged from their win over Leipzig, Alisson starts in goal. A back four then of Trent, Alexander-Arnold, Nat Phillips, Ozan Kabak and Andy Robertson. In midfield, and Fabinho, Gini Wijnaldum and Thiago Alcantara, while Sadio Mane, Thiago Jota and Mo Salah make up their front three, and kickoff is at 8.
Mike says, lads, Tadhg Furlong made a show with the rest of the team, especially the backs with those sidesteps. None of them have any inclination to do that. I think just Tadhg Furlong's so bloody good, isn't he? Beautiful hands as well. Everything he does is quality. John in Cork says, Joe, I see Thierry Henry is on Monday Night Football this evening. Is he trying to work his way back into punditry after failing again at management? Would be interesting to see the Henry Keane Richards combination. Henry back in punditry, Adrian. I'd say you're licking your lips.
I mean, I look at the management failure thing. Look, Gary Neville has done that and clearly came back to punditry and is brilliant at it. I wouldn't be, like, he gives good context for that. I wouldn't be critical of him for that. I'd be critical of him for the a couple of years of fairly dull punditry before that, and I'm so disappointed to hear that that's what's happening tonight, because normally it's a good chance they bring somebody in. Look, maybe he'll be good. They'll talk to him at the end about why things went to pot from the management. Maybe that'll be good. But his punditry, I don't know. Maybe he comes back like a super transformed pundit, Joe, who's like, you know, gone to see the world and come back with this great perspective on life and management and punditry. We'll see.
Because it was such an insular playing career. I mean, come on.
I know. I'm trying to not go with the very obvious response.
Yeah. So some Cheltenham news all gets underway tomorrow, Rich.
Yeah, Altior, the latest name to be withdrawn from this week's festival. Trainer Nicky Henderson has pulled the 11-year-old from Wednesday's Queen Mother Champion Chase. The two-time winner at Cheltenham returned an unsatisfactory scope this morning. While contracts have finally been signed by Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury for their proposed heavyweight title unification bouts, an agreement has been in place since June of last year, but pens were kept from paper until today, according to Joshua's promoter Eddie Hearn. The proposed fights had been controversial from the off, with Fury thanking Daniel Kinnan for his role in brokering the deal. It's expected the first fight between the WBC champion Fury and the WBA, IBF, WBO and IBO champ Joshua will take place in June. Saudi Arabia has been talked about as a potential venue.
It's the feel-good fight of the year, Adrian.
Oh my God. Like, you know, I saw John Evan last week has signed up at the same camp and was having a pop at the media about it and all this sort of stuff. I don't know. It's just become tedious, isn't it? And it's like, It's pretty horrendous, the whole thing, and it ain't going anywhere. That's the one thing that I think, if anybody is expecting that this story is going to disappear anytime soon, we'll be talking about news runs for some time to come, I think.
It'll be the fight of the year, decade, century thus far. So this June, is it, Rich?
Seemingly, yeah. I mean, Hearn said today that venues still have to be signed off on and dates still have to be signed off on, but what he'd spoken about before in previous conversations was that they were looking at a June date for the first one, if not in and around then, and then possibly later in the year or early next year for the second proposed fight between the two. But we're definitely going to get two fights.
Okay. Marvin Hagler then?
Yeah, he passed away over the weekend, some may have noted, and the wife of the former middleweight world champion insists he did not die as a result of a COVID-19 vaccine. Hagler died suddenly the weekend at the age of just 66, and former opponent Thomas Hearns had prefaced his death online by claiming that Hagler was suffering from the after effects of a vaccine. But in a statement today, Kay Hagler, his wife of 31 years, says the vaccine did not cause his death, describing the rumours as nonsense.
Now to Team Sky British Cycling situation. We'll cover this in a bit more depth around 7:30 or so.
Yeah, Bradley Wiggins doesn't believe former British Cycling and Team Sky chief doctor Richard Freeman ordered testosterone in 2011 to dope a rider. Dr. Freeman admitted 18 of 22 charges against him relating to the ordering of a package to British Cycling headquarters in 2011, but denied knowing it was to improve an athlete's performance. A medical tribunal dismissed his claim. He ordered the product Testagel for performance director Shane Sutton. And speaking on his Eurosport podcast this morning, Wiggins called for a fresh investigation into the affair, but says he doesn't think any rider under Freeman's care was stupid enough to use testosterone.
Yeah, we'll get into this with Nick Harris of sportingintelligence.com. I think he spoke to Dr. Freeman as well over the weekend. I mean, there are so many little mini dramas within the Team Sky British Cycling saga now that it's hard to keep track of them all. I mean, this is all totally different to the Jiffy Bag stuff, which UCAD investigated, and in the end they had to just give up on because there was a lack of evidence. This is the 30 sachets of testosterone which arrived at the National Cycling Centre in Manchester in 2011. And we've had various stories about what happened here. For instance, the story for a long time was that these arrived here by mistake. They were delivered to the wrong address and we have returned the testosterone. Then that ultimately turned out shockingly. I mean, who hasn't had testosterone rock up at their house? I mean, with like, all these packages arriving, it's nonstop.
Yeah. Was it supposed to be going to like a random gaff in Hume or Withenshaw or something like that in Manchester? Yeah. And instead it happens to end up at the British Cycling Centre in Manchester.
I mean, of all places. Text in if you haven't had testosterone arrive at your house. But then there was, so Dr. Freeman said, I was pressured into doing it by Shane Sutton, and Sutton denied this. And then the story came out that this was for, so Shane Sutton is one of the coaches, director of performance. Then apparently it was for Shane Sutton's erectile dysfunction, which Shane Sutton like lost his marbles over, came in vehemently, denied that was the case. And the other point, of course, has been made, and it was made by British MP Clive Everett, who's on that sports select committee, which looked into all this stuff earlier this year. Again, there are various different committees. There's a parliamentary committee. This verdict we're talking about has come from a medical tribunal, but Clive Everett has come out and said of Dave Brailsford, interestingly, he said, until this is cleared up, all those involved shouldn't be anywhere near the sport. Clearly there are questions to be answered. People should be suspended while this is properly investigated. And of Brailsford, he said, we have to question, if he didn't know, why didn't he? So, I mean, you know, they're the two uncomfortable truths for Brailsford. You know, this guy is all about marginal gains and attention to detail and the quality of the mattresses. You know, you would think testosterone sachets arriving at HQ is a pretty significant detail. Or, you know, all that marginal gain stuff is nonsense. And he didn't have a clue all this stuff was going on right under his nose. You know, they're which is it? And neither's really great for Sir Dave, of course. So we'll talk about it at 7:30. But I mean, I've touched on, you know, between the Jiffy Bag and between the testosterone and all the excuses, Adrian, like there's other stuff as well in this whole saga. But it's safe to say that Team Sky and British Cycling, who are now the post-Lance era, I don't think anybody's buying much of it anymore.
It's crazy almost that it's gone on this long, isn't it? And like you say, it's a different story than was there before. It's, I don't know, does it not reflect well on the people that are investigating it? I've seen some of the committees that they've been in front of at times, including Shane Sutton's one, was it last year, maybe the year before, even at this stage, it all sort of melds into one. And they can be pretty aggressive, pretty brilliant to watch.
Yeah, they're good. They're better than that committee that had John Delaney and the lads in front of them previous to the most recent one.
The whole structure, it makes a mockery of the structure of our own committees. Like, you know, everybody will get a question, and the most important thing is that you ask a question, as opposed to listening to what the person in front of you has to say. But that notwithstanding, I can't understand how it hasn't wrapped up by now. And like, I don't know, does that say that, like, you know, Team Sky weren't doing anything wrong and they just can't find enough or anything to pin on them, or just the quality of the investigation has been poor? Difficult to tell.
I think it's probably a bit of everything. Like with the Jiffy Bag, it's near impossible to prove what was in it. And then with the Freeman investigation, this most recent one, I mean, remember his laptop, very unfortunately, was stolen on holiday in Greece, which had a load of records. So in terms of evidence, I think it's proven pretty difficult. But we'll talk about it at 7:30 in a bit more depth with Nick Harris. You're taking us to Graham Burke, Richie.
Yeah, he's making his loan move to Shamrock Rovers a permanent deal. The Republic of Ireland striker rejoined the Hoops on loan from Preston last season, scoring 8 goals as Rovers secured the title. Burke's Preston deal expires this coming summer and he signed a pre-contract with Rovers to stay with the champions for 3 more seasons. Scotland's First Minister says the government there still needs to be convinced that Saturday's match between Rangers and Celtic can go ahead. Both Old Firm clubs have urged fans to stay at home on the weekend, and Rangers have been criticised after supporters broke coronavirus rules to celebrate winning the Scottish Premiership title just over a week ago. And Nicola Sturgeon says the statements are welcome, but more work needs to be done.
I never want to be in a position of standing here saying football matches can't go ahead or any of the other things that we really enjoy in life can't go ahead. But that's the reality while we're still in this position. And big gatherings, we know presents a risk of transmission.
There's a text in saying, lads, Eric Lamella's Rabona, discuss. Well, indeed. Is this goal of the season?
Yeah.
I didn't even spot it. Did you spot it the first time?
Yeah, I spotted it, like, because he hits the ball in such a weird way and the ball moves in such an odd way towards the goal that there was no way it was just a normal right foot or left foot curler. Like, he's done something queer there, and that is the Rabona of all Rabonas, to be fair. And then, to top it off, they get beaten and he gets sent off, so it ultimately counts for nothing.
My favorite,
which is
part,
the most Spurs thing in the world.
My favourite part was Reguilon's reaction. Where
he's like, oh my God.
He wanted to run and celebrate, but he just had to stop and he had to put his hands on his head in just shock at what have I just seen. Well, that's when you know you've done something pretty impressive on a pitch.
That was class. Yeah. Most Spurs thing to have ever happened on a football pitch, isn't it? Like, they scored one of the greatest goals of all time. He's got sent off for something totally stupid. Mm. And then they've got to lost the game. Like,
very Spursy.
Spurs lads, yeah.
Well, indeed. I mean, well said. So Shane Lowry then, he's kind of form had been off for a lot of the last couple of months, but he put in a good performance at Sawgrass, Rich.
Yeah, save for a dodgy Friday, he would have really been in contention there last night. Shane Lowry achieved a top 10 finish at the Players' Championship. A near flawless final round of 68 saw the Clara golfer end the weekend on 9 under par. The tournament itself was won by Justin Thomas, who's 68 on the final day, saw him finish on 14 under and a shot clear of the evergreen Lee Westwood.
Yeah, Lee Westwood, 47. Aging very well, Lee Westwood. Looks better now than he did in his 20s.
Ah, I watched it. Watch a lot of that golf, Joes. I'm sure you did yourself. It was class. He had one of the most interesting things to say that I've ever heard a sports person say after his round on the Saturday, where he said that, was it something along the lines of, I won't ever let the game of golf get me down again. Did you hear that? Am I misquoting him?
No, but he has said, I mean, he's said something similar now in the last couple of years. I think Lee had a tough time in that he spent a lot of years being asked, so when are you going to win a major? Mm. And then there was the next decade was followed by, oh, it's really not going to happen for you winning a major, is it? And I suspect that was quite tricky for him. And now in his 40s, the pressure's almost off and people are spending a lot of time going, hang on, actually, you were a bloody good player. You're world number one. Right. You've won all these tournaments. I mean, you know, you're great. Don't let the major thing bring you down. And he's almost treating his 40s as bonus time to be enjoyed almost, and it's not going to make much odds either way. Do you know, he could be, someone's going to win a major at 50. We were saying this in Golf Weekly even last week. It might be a Harrington at an Open someday. It might be Phil Mickelson somewhere, but it could very easily be a Lee Westwood, because at 47 he started hitting the gym late in life and he's in great nick. But yeah, you're right, Adrian. He's kind of just not taking it too seriously. Like, it's sunny, I'm getting gazillions in the bank, I'm playing with my fiance, what's not to love?
He's off to Augusta today to play a couple of rounds with his son. He's about 30-1, Joe, I think, something like that, for for the Masters, 15, 16 favourite, something like that, down
red
the track.
Hot.
Would you be thinking?
You'd be thinking. As for Rory, I mean,
oh,
I just... less said the better. It turns out his swing is messed up because he was trying to catch up Bryson DeChambeau, the best part of Rory's game, and he's gone and messed with it trying to add an extra 10 yards. So you'd be worried about his Augusta chances at the moment. Fellas, we're out of time. Richie, thank you.
Cheers, lads.
Adrian, as ever, thank you.
Thanks, lads.
We've Keith Wood and Neve Briggs on the way at 8 o'clock. We've Pat Nevin and Brian Kerr, the football show, and up next, Nick Harris is going to talk to us about this Team Sky business with Dr. Richard Freeman.
The OTB Podcast Network.